One night, you know, when you're like, before you go to bed, you have these conversations with your spouse and you're talking, and we turn the lights off. And I'm like, I'm going to be a mental performance coach one day. And my wife, I hear her say, "You're all talk." Like, no, there's no way. She just said that. I said, and my back's turned to her. I'm like, what? It's pitch black. She goes, "You're all talk." And I didn't like the tone how she said it either. I didn't like the tone. I turn on my light and I sit up and I looked at her. I'm like, what did you just say? Like, say it again. Like, let me hear it a third time. She goes, "I said, you're all talk. You keep saying how you're going to go after your dreams and you've done nothing." I'm like, yeah. And I turn over, turn the light off, and I didn't sleep that night. That was the moment. Those words that "you're all talk" from my wife is what really kicked me in the gear. So, you know what? I am all talk. I'm sorry. I got to stop talking about it, start being about it and doing it.
Look good, feel good, play good.
Right.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Neon.
That's actually one of our core values.
Oh, that's right? A good core value.
In
values.
Our business, we have an L in our FAIR BALL is our acronym. It's kind of long. Uh-huh. But one of the L's is look good, feel good, play good.
I like that.
Right? Which, you know, I feel like if you feel it, just, I mean, like on the field, yeah. If I had my pants down, I felt like I looked better, even though in the minor leagues we had to have our pants up. Obviously, it doesn't really affect your play, but mentally, I felt better, pants down, looked good, I felt good, I tried to play good. But I mean, you know all about that. I mean, getting into the side of like just mentally understanding what you're doing on the field, off the field, in life. I want to dive into that a little bit today because you're all about skills, conditioning, process. Like, tell me about where that even started. How do you get into it?
I ask myself that question all the time. Like, if you were to tell me 10 years ago that I would be doing this for a living, I would have been like, there's no way, that doesn't even exist. And so I wanted to be a professional baseball player. So my dad played for the Dodgers and the Brewers. Funny story, so my dad never played.
I wanted to be a professional baseball player too.
So he never played baseball. He's from the island of American Samoa, and Samoans are known for being football players. The Troy Polamalus, the Junior Seaus, tons of Polynesians with long last names. And so he grew up fighting and as a musician, like just doing that growing up. He went to BYU as a student, and then he decided, you know what? I need to do something while I'm here. Let me go try out for the baseball team. He'd never played baseball before. So he goes and he tries out for the team. Because he hustled so much and just the way he would go and get the foul balls and just run, he made the team. So that was just a miracle in and of itself.
Love that.
So he was always on the bench. It was his junior year. He only had 2 years to play. Never played. Going into his senior year, he's like, I want to make an impact. He worked hard. He was starting third baseman and led the nation in home runs at one time.
For the nation.
All this in the nation, America. First team All-American. He didn't get drafted, but he signed as a free agent. Dodgers, Brewers, ended up being a coach. I wanted to follow his footsteps. That's what I always wanted to do. Went to BYU myself, became a pitcher, started and did pretty good. Had a freshman All-American my freshman year. Went on a 2-year church mission, came back, and then I sucked. I was really bad. But I was getting my degree in broadcast journalism. I wanted to be the next Stuart Scott, like the broadcaster. And so my first internship was in Los Angeles. The first person I ever interviewed was Kobe Bryant. Wow. And when I say interview, it's not like one of these interviews. It's like it was one of the multiple people who had like a microphone in his face. Right. I left that moment and I told my wife and I said, I don't want to do this. So I went, got my degree in broadcasting.
Wait, why? Why?
Great question. I realized in that moment, I didn't want to report on athletes. I wanted to help athletes, but I didn't want to be a coach. And so I didn't know what else was out there. And so we went back to Salt Lake City or Utah, and I became a teacher. I fell in love with teaching. So I thought I'm going to be a teacher for the rest of my life and be a university professor. I really enjoyed it. I went to get a master's degree in higher education. And I got declined by BYU, and I played there. I'm like, wait, how did you decline me? And then got declined by another university. And then I'm getting declined by all these schools. And I'm like, okay, how am I getting declined? Oh, well, but I still wanted this grad degree. I looked at University of Utah. They had this degree called the psychosocial aspect of sport. And I called up the dean. So this is 2008. Called up the dean. And I said, hey, what is psychosocial aspect of sport? And she goes, oh, it's the science of optimizing human performance. I was like, okay, what does that mean? And she goes, oh, it's like sports psychology and helping athletes get better. I'm like, there's a degree for this? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, sign me up. So I was like, I sent
She's
her
like, you're the first person in this course.
I know, right? So I send her my transcript, and she calls me back. She goes, yeah, you're not going to get accepted. I'm like, wait, what? She goes, you have none of the prerequisites, none of the classes. Your GRE scores are terrible. Yeah, you can't get in. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, like, and I begged her. She's like, okay, we'll bring you in on academic probation. Got my degree in that. Still taught. And then I started, it kind of went from there. And then I started teaching parents, helping parents, because parents would go to Little League teams. I'd have these Little League teams, a Little League team, and mom and dad is yelling at their kids, relax, focus, be confident. But they weren't teaching their kids how. And I went to the parents at the end of the game. I'm like, can I teach you tools and how to help your kids? And like, I'm just learning myself. I don't know, but I'm not gonna tell you how to raise your kids, but there's a science to this. And then that just kind of took off from there. And so it just, then that led to the military, led to IMG Academy, led to the Boston Red Sox, Cleveland Browns, Rays, Google, WWE. And it kind of just evolved just a decade, just 15 years later, just kind of rolled into different things.
That's wild, man. Yeah. I mean, I want to dive into more, like, I know we've spoken about this. I think of it as mental skills and conditioning as one way I saw it, performance coach.
Yeah.
You were telling me it's more like process coach and development. And all those are different,
yeah,
in a way.
So you could speak to this. So in your experience as a player, like, you've probably seen a lot of people come in and out of that clubhouse, right, especially at the major league level. Mm-hmm. Teams are bringing in people to, you have biomechanists, you have scientists, you have of every little of nature, you have mental health psychologists. Sometimes players are looking around, they're like, who is this? Who is this, this person walking through the clubhouse? But they're there with a very important function. Just, I'm going to answer the question by asking you a question.
Right.
What, in your experience, as you came up seeing the mental health, mental performance field, how was it for you, like, from the player standpoint? What was your view and perspective of it? Leading up until even 2022, 2023.
So like you're saying, like, every organization wants an edge, some kind of edge, you know, and I feel like a lot of these teams are looking for what that new edge is, whether it's the biomechanics stuff, whether the mental stuff and preparation, you know, what is that edge that can separate us from these other teams? And, you know, there was a couple teams that had, you know, the mental skills side, the process coach, they had that position. But it was kind of like a part-time thing. And I think a lot of guys really had a hard time trusting, you know, who they're talking to. And, you know, you understand this person is working for the organization. So at the end of the day, you don't know if they have to report back to the organization. They tell you it's confidential, but you just still have that lack of, like, there's a little uncertainty in the back there. So you really don't feel like you can, like, open up and really tell this person what I want to really, really tell you. So that was going to be one of my main questions for you, was you're at the point now where you've done this for a while. So you have the reputation amongst players, and other players talk about how good you are. So somebody going into having a conversation or starting dialogue with you, the trust is there because they know, listen, this guy's worked for the team. A lot of guys for the Rays love talking to him. They're confident that everything they've told him in trust has stayed in-house, to the point where other people and other organizations were reaching out. So in the beginning of all that, like, how did you gain that trust from players? Was it something like, I'm just going to trust this over the long period of time, that eventually these guys will trust what I'm doing? Because I feel like so many people want that instantly. So how did you go about that when you first got on?
I think the answer ties exactly to what your question was. And so one of the things that I noticed as well, as I was talking to players, I wanted to get their take on what this role plays for them. So I would talk to the Corey Klubers. I would talk to the Rich Hills. I talked to our veteran guys who would come in, the Nelson Cruises and so forth. They just kind of hear what, even the Tommy Pham's and these guys who have been around, and who, like, how do you view it? So there's confusion around it. So number one is there's two really different types. There's the mental health side, which is incredibly important. And every team has a practitioner who helps with the heavier stuff, more of the off field. You have relationship stuff, you have anxiety, deep anxiety stuff, you need depression stuff, which is real. It is absolutely real. So you need a licensed clinician to help people navigate those things that might have nothing to do with baseball. It's way deeper. I never wanted to have a player think that I can do that with them. Oh, Justin, I'm going through some really dark times. Let me talk to you. I want to be able to say, no, let me put you in the hands of a professional. Let me bring someone into our relationship to help you out with that. So that's more the mental health psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist, counselor role, that mental health psychology. Then there's the field of performance psychology, performance optimization, where you want to help a player lock in. You want to help a player slow the game down. You want to help a player just kind of be better and clear with decision making. And that's where I tend to be, I'm more in. So I always, and yes, as you can tell, it's like a Venn diagram. Sometimes it's really cloudy. It's like, wait a minute, they're a little bit, it's one in the same. And that's where it can have a little bit of confusion sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think they are the same. The way you're explaining it is obviously very clear. But for me, thinking back when I played, I mean, I was still before the mental health era, right? I think I retired 9 years ago now. So like, I feel like the last almost decade was where like mental health has started to creep in to like understand how that can help you perform on or off the field.
Yes.
But the way you put it, I do think that has a deeper definition where you're right, it is on and off the field, but the process of like being able to get through each day and be successful or overcome those failures to be successful the next day, yeah, is the process of like of getting to the field, showing up, taking the at bat or getting out there and making an out, pitching that inning. I think that's way different. I think it's way different. And I feel like I've wished that was there. I'm like sad right now thinking about it. I wish we had something like that to even talk about. But that was like naturally you had to kind of concoct that, which thankfully I feel like I was alert of, but I didn't know how to put it in words. It was just something you had to do on your own or you'd be out the game anyways.
You know who helped me with the definition of players? I would always ask the players when we have a conversation or like over time, and I would always to answer your question, I would listen to how players would introduce me to their wives, how they introduce me to their families, and what they tell their family or when the camera shoot, who are you talking to? Like we see it on the camera, who are you talking to? I want to know how the players define and kind of say what I do. So they'll be, hey, this is Justin Sua. And I'm like listening, oh, he's our process guy. Oh, he helps with the mind. Or he helps me just kind of clear my thinking. And I always noticed that. I was like, huh, they don't call me the mental guy. They don't call me. And I'd ask him, why don't you call me the mental guy? Like what? Or mental pro. They're like, I don't know. I just don't want to say, I don't know. Like you're the process guy. You just help me with the process. And I was like, that's where I got that title, the process and development. Because everything is the process. Hey, what's your process? How is your process with your thinking? What's your process with decision making? Hey, how are you? You're going through a tough time. What's your process to navigate through this? And so that's why I like the process side. Also, I think there are coaches who teach the mental game, hitting coaches, pitching coaches who teach the mental game, which is great. I think strength and conditioning coaches teach the mental really well, really well. And so when everyone can teach the mental game, and then it's like, but yes, I have a degree in performance psychology. It's like, okay, what can separate me? Okay, let me focus on the process because it's not just a mental side. We're talking about environmental design. What's your environment like? What's your morning routine like? What's your what are your relationships like? And who are you allowing into your mind? So some things that are outside of sports psychology. That's why I think a process coach is kind of it's a more accurate depiction of what I do. And so that's kind of where it all came from.
Yeah, and that's one thing that we were talking about when you and I started our dialogue. It was about a month before spring. We didn't end up really getting to dive deep into it because, you know, you went off the spring with Tampa. I went off the spring with Chicago. And that's what I came to learn. Like, this is a lifestyle. You know, it's a lifestyle. It's something that you have to be so consistent with. It's like we mentioned before the show. It's like dieting. You can't just eat one or two meals and you're like, I'm healthy now. Now I'm having a healthy lifestyle. Yeah. This is something you got to repeat every single day. And for me, as a young player, now my first manager, Ned Yost, I have so much more appreciation. Not that I didn't appreciate him before, but each year that I'm away from Ned, I have more and more appreciation because when we were first there in Kansas City, it was a bunch of young guys. He had to not only manage the team, do all this, he had to teach us that process. He had to have his coaches ready to teach us that process. And it's basically, like you said, the environment. If I'm grouped up with guys and we know if we stay consistent to our routine and we prepare the same way each and every day, and we know we're putting everything we can into this preparation to be ready to go on that night, that's all we can control. And that's basically all we can do. So, and we've talked about this before, but the Tampa, what that culture has created is those guys look like they're just controlling what they can control, and they're genuinely going out there having fun. And that's something that's really unique. And you've had the opportunity to, like you said, WWE, you work with golfers. Everything is the same as far as routine, and you got to really stick to that. But baseball is such a different mental game. So how well can you handle that failure to the point where it's like, man, like, if you have somebody and a group of people to really lean on, and like we said, you can, you know, kind of go through this grind together and be able to, you know, be lighthearted about certain things, then you're going to be light years above. But the position that you're in, it's such a fine line, because I've had people in certain organizations that when whatever we call it, the process coach, the mental skills coach, they see the guy 10 yards down the way and they're beelining the other way and they don't want nothing to do with this guy.
Why?
Because it becomes awkward. It becomes, and you hit it perfectly. You let the player come to you. You let the player do all the talking. A lot of these guys want to just ask questions right away. And I believe that a lot of these guys want that instant credibility instead of staying true to themselves all throughout that process, all throughout the season. And at some point in the season, a guy, it might take a week, it might take a month, it might take September for a guy to be like, all right, Sua, like, let's do this, man. Like, let's do this. And it's hard because it's like we said, it's a fine line of I can either beeline it or people are going to find their way to you and start approaching you and asking you all this stuff. Mm.
I wonder how if it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, if we would have been like, oh yeah, I'd love to talk to Sua. You know, is that just something that we've now come to be accustomed to, like, oh, mental health process, like this is cool now, right? Or if 15, 20 years ago, we would have been like, everyone would have been beeline. Obviously there wasn't even a guy there to do it, right? But, and so now if it's available in the minor leagues, our guys accepting it. And then you get to the big leagues, you got guys that have succeeded. They're major leaguers now. And you're coming in, all of a sudden you're in the clubhouse and, you know, why do I need to talk to this guy? I mean, look, maybe some guys do, some guys don't, but what's the percentage of guys that are actually taking to it even now, right? I'm sure it's not easy for you to just walk in there with a bunch of very successful guys on the field. Like, what are they taking that off the field?
You hit the nail on the head. I think one of the things I always, any organization I go into, and I think this approach has been helpful for me. I'll just speak for myself. Whoever I'm talking to, two things I want to keep in mind, and I want to make sure I'm explicit with this. I respect your experience and I respect your expertise. Nobody knows Eric Hosmer better than you. Nobody knows you better than you. No, and so to be able to express that and say, hey, you don't need some dude from the outside who's never been in your shoes telling you how to think. And so it's like, okay, I come in peace. Let's talk about Netflix. let's talk about pizza. Let's talk about families. Like, and hey, if you want to have other chats to talk about some other things, we can. No problem. But yeah, I think that's and even if it doesn't come from me, like, even if it's, there'll be moments that, you know what it's like. You guys, like, you're eating you're eating before you, after BP or whatever, and you're with two players, and then a player will ask me, hey, how do I quiet my brain down? Sue, what do you got on slowing the game down? I'm like, and I'm eating, and I'm like, I don't know, like, hey, Eric, what do you got on slowing the game? What advice do you have for him? I'm just going and crushing, and meanwhile these two are talking. And he's giving way better advice than I could ever give. And I get up and I leave and they just continue to talk. And so that's a lot of times that's what it looks like. Or I have a really good relationship with you. And I see a young cat who might be struggling, and me and you are buddies. And I'm like, Haas, hey, you should go talk to so-and-so. He's having a tough time. He's just slow. His mind's all over the place. Maybe you talk. And then you'd be like, oh, got you. And the player doesn't even know that we had, I just noticed it. Doesn't want to hear it from me. He'd rather hear it from you. And so a lot of times that's really, it's what it looks like as well.
If we were to write down your job description, it'd be like, just ask questions, connect the players, and walk out of the room.
Yes, exactly. just pay attention and just try to be helpful and just respect players and respect coaches and just respect people and just notice little things. And I've learned a lot of like where to stand, when to talk, when not to talk, and having feel on just little subtle things, where not to be, where the cameras are, and if a guy strikes out, don't go up. Like just those little baseball feel things that sometimes annoys people. But yeah, this is.
So do you stick mostly to like baseball process and on the field, keeping them alert and focused on succeeding there for the team, or is there stuff that like takes you off the field?
Because when you develop a strong relationship with someone and you're with them, you know, we talked about when you're with them in baseball every single day, every rain delay, every flight, every hotel, you're always together. You develop really close relationships. And when you develop close relationships, you're in an outfield shagging BP, and all of a sudden a guy's down. Hey, what's up? And oh man, it's family stuff or whatever. Just like any human, just like anyone who's watching this, you're at work with someone and you have a good friendship. You're not a therapist, but your friends will probably share some things with you. And so that's, I find myself in a lot of conversations about things that are off the field as well. Yeah.
The first impression is so huge though in your role, because, and I want to get to that, the team stuff you're talking about, we'll get to that after this, but the first impression of stuff, there's nobody has a bigger ego than a professional athlete that's made it to the top of the level of the sport they're playing. So for somebody that they don't feel as a player has a resume close to theirs, they're going to sit here and say, who is this dude coming at me telling me I need to hit in the cage before this, or I need to do this a certain way? So that first impression, you know, you can really lose a guy and like don't know if you can ever really eventually get that back and connect with the guy or whatnot. So that whole approach of, you know, wait and see, let them do the talking, it really is like it's a genius part. Like that's, I think, one of the biggest things that you've learned in your role that is why you're successful and why people end up coming your way.
Can I add, in addition to that, first of all, thank you. Number two is what I think is really important to remember, and I try to remember, is that there's no one recipe for every single person. Everyone is so diverse. Everyone is so different. Your process won't work for Salvi. Salvi's process won't work for Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole's process won't work for Tyler Glasnow. And right. So everyone's process is different. And what's interesting, the process that works for you at 34 years old or 22 years old won't work for you when you're 34 years old. And so helping guys realize that process that you had now that used to serve you, it might not serve you. And so one thing that I always try to do is I try to understand that before you can change a system, you need to understand the current patterns of the system. And so when a guy wants to kind of change or evolve, it's like, okay, let's understand what makes you tick now. What's your story? What's your belief system now? But yeah.
So I would imagine, you know, you've had guys day one that this guy's new, you guys hit it off, boom. And at the same time, I would imagine there's probably been guys that you've been in the same clubhouse for a couple of years, and it's not till year two where you really start diving in and create that dialogue with a player. So that's where you and your role, when someone comes up to you and they're vulnerable and they want to start talking, that's when it's like, all right, now is when the real dialogue begins, because it's like you respected this guy. He's seen you respected your space. You're not going to come up to him. You let him do his thing. But now he probably sees or hears that the stuff is going good with other players. So at that point in time, that's when it's got to feel like, all right, now we can really start diving in and we can get to work.
You're absolutely right. And then there's sometimes where it's year three, year four. And then there's sometimes where it's never. You just don't jive with the guy or you don't connect. And what I try to do is I understand that I think anyone is, you're not for everybody. Everyone's not going to love it or want to have these conversations. But I hope that I'm never... No one hates me. Like at the end of the day, it's like, hey, what's up? How's the family? We might not ever talk about their process, but I know all about their family and their kids. And like we've had some of my closest friends, like players, we have never once talked about the mental game, but we're really close
I'm going to add that to your job description. Yeah. Just make friends.
Respect people and just be there.
That's interesting though, because like you think about how many people, I asked this before, how many people take to it, but how many guys actually want to try to do this or like maybe even overthink it, right? I have a lot of conversations with people about like, just relaxing the mind or trying to keep your mind on things or off of things. Like, I was an overthinker for sure, but like, that's what I feel like got me there. Mm-hmm. I thought about every aspect of my game. I wasn't the guy that was just going to grip it and rip it with no batting gloves and hit bombs. Like, that wasn't me. I had to make sure I understood everything about that pitcher, where he might throw the ball, or how I can even be successful against him. I might just be able to bunt against this guy for, like, I'd figure out anyway. I had to overthink it. But then I've had some coaches be like, don't think up there. And I'm like, don't think up there. How do you think I got to where I am? Like, so that, you know, not that that's bad advice, because some guys probably, it's probably better to just not think about it. Even like off the field, it's like sometimes life just goes and things are good. And if you really try to dive in, you might actually go the other way. It's like, when do you like actually get into these things? Is it only when things are going bad? You know, but some people can handle it probably when things are good and they want to get better. It's so interesting, like when guys cross that line of like, I want to talk about this.
Exactly. Going along with what you said, a lot of times there are people think that this is, a lot of people will think, oh, when you talk to the mental guy, oh, something's wrong. Oh, if you're seen talking to that person, oh, there probably something's wrong. That's a stigma that I wanted to completely eliminate. I wanted to be able to provide, and there's not just myself, there are some really good practitioners and starting to become larger just in baseball. Teams yeah. have very robust departments now in mental performance and mental health. But I kind of secretly, I wanted, when people were seen talking to me, they'd be like, oh, they're just talking to Sewell. Like, right. like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's out. Because we could be talking about whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But you brought up a really good point, because everyone's so different.
Everyone's process. Yeah, everyone's so
exactly.
different.
Everyone's
I thought that same
yes.
thing.
And everyone's process is so different. So, for example, I'll never forget, there's one week where I got the same question from three different people on three different days. So NFL, I was working with the NFL sidelines with the Cleveland Browns. A guy comes up to me right before kickoff and he goes, man, my heart's going crazy. How do I slow the game down? And then I looked at him and we're literally minutes before kickoff.
You like talk to Eric Hosmer. He knows how to slow the game down.
I was like, it was right before I said, see the top of the field goal. I just stare at the flag at the very top and just take one slow, deep breath. And so we did it. He goes, oh, okay. I slowed it down. And so I had 45 seconds with him. The next day, I think I was a little bit later, baseball guy comes up to me and he goes, man, how do I slow the game down? And so I asked him, I was like, oh, how have you done it in the past? Oh, we do it like this, did this. And so I went a little bit deeper with him. Another football player comes up to me. How do I slow the game down? I'm so nervous. I'm like, you're fine. You're good. He's like, yeah, you're right. It's okay. So it's the same question, three different people. I gave three completely different answers because their situations were different, because their personalities were different. And so I think that's where I struggle with cookie cutter like rules and, yeah. And like step one, step two, step three. It really depends. And that's why I think the field of the psychology struggles sometimes, because then the question is, how do you know he's good? How do you know the guy is good? How do you know?
How do you quantify
your
success?
Oh
right?
Yeah, just has helped the guy. How do you know it's not me, or it's the fact that he's a great pitching coach, or it's the player himself? He did it, and so that's where it becomes very difficult. I actually asked the GM one day. I was interviewing for a job I didn't get, and I asked the general manager of that team. I said, "How will you measure my success?" And I knew that made them really uncomfortable, because they thought I was going to have the answer. And I was like, I don't know the answer. Let me ask you before you ask me. And so he said, well, I'll never forget. He said, how players respond to you when you walk into the clubhouse. I was like, huh, what do you mean? Explain. And he goes, if they walk in and they start busting your chops or saying, hey, what up, and come up to you or and like laugh or joke or whatever, that's when I know you're successful. As opposed to if they beeline or run away from you, just like you mentioned. And I thought, wow, the general manager of this huge organization is going to base my effectiveness on how the players respond to me. And obviously there's a lot of other ways that people are trying to do it, but it comes down to, like you said, that relationship, yeah. that connecting with people, or people feeling, all right, we can talk to him. He's safe. He's safe here.
No doubt. And that's so different, but similar. I remember young guys all the time. They come up to me in the locker room, man, this guy seems like this guy's always getting on me, man. Or like anytime we go on the bus, you know, we'd mess with guys, have them sing in front of the bus or in front of the guys on the bus when they're rookies. And it's like they call on me every single time. Like, why aren't they calling on this guy? And I'm like, bud, you want that. Like, if they're calling on you, that means they like you. Right. The moment where they forget about you and stop paying attention to you, then we got a real problem. You know what I mean? That is not where you want to be. And you've gotten to experience the different sports, like you're saying. NFL, everything is geared for that Sunday. We need to win this Sunday. That week leading up to it, we need to win, all that. Professional sports now, and especially baseball, and it's so individualized. You know, we talked about earlier, when you're in high school, you go to a big-time showcase, a big-time tournament. They don't care how your team did. They care about you. They have an individual report on how you did, all that. When you go to college, you're trying to get a scholarship, minor leagues, big leagues, you're trying to get paid. So in a sport or in a world where it's so individualized, how do you get everyone to buy into the team aspect? Because that, to me, is the biggest battle. And I think now, like, just with baseball and some of the teams that I was on towards the end, luckily I was fortunate to play with guys that were awesome guys and team guys, and I think they were kind of built that way coming up. But, like, how do you instill that in somebody?
Yeah,
you
know, that's a really good question. And that's kind of the new trajectory. That's where my career has kind of turned. Now I'm more working with coaches, more working with more leaders of organization to create these systems to enhance the culture. I think I really noticed it changing the last couple seasons, really last three seasons in both NFL and in baseball in particular, where I would really connect with the veterans on the team. And we wouldn't talk about the vets were so open. I remember player vets would tell, like, one in particular, he would just tell me, he'd be like, man, he goes, I talk to you so much more now, but when I was younger, I thought I had it all figured out, but now it's like, I know, like, these conversations are enlightening. They're helpful, because again, I'm not doing the one talking, it's the players talking. But now what we talk about, the questions I ask the vets is like, hey, how's the culture? How do you know? Is there any players that you need to circle up with? Hey, is there any activities you need to do? Just this past year, I would just be able to listen to the veterans talk about, hey, let's do karaoke night tonight. Hey, let's all go out tonight. And just, Sue, what do football players do? What does this group do? And so having more leadership conversations with the veterans, like, not me, but with the veterans, and, hey, have you explored this? Or have you noticed this? Or, hey, just so you know, we just got this young guy up. He's playing a huge significant role. He's a young guy. It might be helpful to take care of him, because we really need him now. Just offering subtle suggestions, and they might throw some out, but I have such a good relationship with the vets that some of them, they're like, oh, you know what? That's a really good point. And so I think that's where it came down to, having a good relationship with the veterans and then offering subtle suggestions or asking questions about how they are managing their clubhouse. And so I think that's kind of, it's more of an indirect way.
The clubhouse is so huge, man, because, you know, even like if I was going to Omaha on a AAA rehab and I'm going for 2-3 days, as soon as I get to the clubhouse, I'm going to whoever the longest tenure guy is in that clubhouse. I'm going to say, hey, how's everything going over here? Who are some young guys I can reach out to? You know, how's this guy doing right now? Where's this guy at? So you always kind of check in. And whoever you feel like is leading that clubhouse, you want to get kind of a feel on what's going on, how that's going on. And then, you know, on the big league level, it's like every player is going through something. You're either an up and down guy and you're fighting for your life to stay up there. You're either going through arbitration and you're trying to make real money at this point. You're either signed a big free agent deal or got a big extension and trying to live up to that. So you got to realize everyone is going through this internal battle. As a group, how can we make this as fun as possible and have everyone forget their little internal battle they're going through and just try and try and treat it like it's a high school summer league team? Way easier said than done, but as a leader, as a veteran guy in the locker room, that's the goal, right? That's the goal, is to get these guys as loose as possible and get everybody buying in. And to me, that's culture. You know what I mean? You're trying to get everything out of the guy that's doing the videos, that's getting everything uploaded to your iPad, to the shortstop. Yep. Like, that is culture to me.
Yeah, that's so true.
That starts from the top, too. I think Dayton did that great with the Royals, right? Dayton, JJ, Scott, bringing all that down, all the way down, all the way through the minor leagues. And it's worked, right? 2007 or 6 when they came in, all the way through 13, 14 when they made it to the World Series. It's like, that really showed. We won at every level in the minor leagues, and then you guys went on to the World, losing the World Series, winning the World Series. Like, that carried over big time. And I think that came down from the top. There really was a culture there. We were always feeling good. We were always there helping each other out and building off each other. And it'd be really cool to have someone like you in place too, I'm sure, if we had it at the moment, but just wasn't a thing.
I love that you said that. It starts from the top. I think being with the Rays as long as I have, Eric Neander and from Kevin Cash, as we were talking about, just creating that, who have feel and they understand that these are humans. Like at the end of the day, these are players with families who are you're in the arena and you have these lights on you and your failures are broadcast around the world. They make memes out of you guys. And to be able to create an environment where, hey, how can we create an environment where we're here for each other? We got each other's back. And yeah, we might be have different, obviously the goal is win the World Series, right, but with different backgrounds, with different contracts and different family dynamics. Yeah, I think it takes that huge group effort. And I think the role that I play, the very small one, is just going around and asking questions. Hey, what about this? Or how are you going to approach this? And how are you going to approach that? And at least just stirring, just getting conversation going. Yeah. I think that's kind of what it's
trying. Let's take a left turn with family dynamics. You guys both have families, right? Multiple kids. You have a one-year-old. I know, I'm sure your wife and kids have an influence on what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you just went through some health scares, I mean, I think we should talk about, because that was pretty crazy. And we almost didn't have you for the podcast, which was wild, right? We were set to have our pre-production meeting that was really going to line up all the guests we have for this first shoot that we're sitting here for. And Saturday, I think it was Saturday noon, we had a meeting set up, and at like 11:40, get a text from you, actually a text from your wife. Hey, Justin wanted me to text you guys in this group text, right? He's in the ICU with a collapsed lung. So he just wanted me to let you know he's not going to make the meeting. And I'm like, one, we're just like, what the hell is going on? First of all, two, it was like, how mindful is this guy? Like, I know he's like a mental skills coach of sorts, but like, come on, dude. Like, how could you possibly, be like not able to breathe and thinking to text us? So thank you for that one. But you know, and this story, I mean, starts from you woke up and just had half a lung.
Yeah. So we just get back from a cruise. And so we get back from a cruise. The cruise, we're getting ready to walk off. Like we're gathering, my wife's taking care of the kids and she's finishing up the final touches. And I'm sitting on the couch going through my phone, just reading my phone. And all of a sudden, I just feel my chest get really heavy. And I remember just looking around and thinking, okay, did anyone else notice that? And I was like, okay, it's really weird. I thought it was just congestion.
Gravity?
Exactly. What's up with this gravity going on? And so I thought it was just congestion, or I thought I had just like spontaneous COVID. Like I had no idea what it was. Didn't think it was what it actually was. So I'm like, okay, not that big a deal. I can't breathe, fine. Like, well, I have to breathe on purpose now. So we drive 3 hours to the house. And I'm like, okay, I can still do it. I wonder if I could I don't know if this is how my brain works. Let me see if I can just force this out of me, this congestion out of me. Jump on a Peloton, start riding for 45 minutes hard. Nope, still there. Think I made it worse. But okay, that was a fluke. Let me go lift weights. Okay, that's still there. How about a sauna? The sauna is going to open up. Didn't work. I'm like, okay, that's weird. Go to bed that night, Friday night, 1 a.m, and now I really can't breathe. Feels like I'm breathing out of a straw. Tell my wife, hey, you need to take me to the ER. She's like, what? I don't even like to take medicine. And so she knew it was a big deal. Go to the ER. I'm like, yeah, nothing's wrong. Like, I'm like, okay. And I'm like, all right, like, fine, nothing's wrong. Just so you know, I can't breathe. She's like, you're going to be fine. I'm like, okay, but it's kind of scary, but okay, if the doctor says it's all right. My wife, she's like, not having it. She's like, run some kind of test, something. So I get an EKG, like for those who don't know, it's the heart, to measure the heart. And then I get an X-ray, just check it out. Get those, go back into the room, and we're just sitting there for a little bit. We're about to get discharged. And the guy, technician who did my heart, the heart procedure, the EKG or EEG, I forgot which one it is. He comes in, he goes, oh, you're still here. I said, oh, sorry, man, we'll get out of here. He goes, no, I thought you'd be in the ICU by now. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, doctor didn't tell you? I said, no. He goes, he looks around and goes, you have a collapsed lung. I'm like, what? And the doctor comes in and he's like rattled and he's like, I am so sorry. You have a collapsed lung. You need a procedure right now. And so didn't get the procedure until the next day. And yeah, hooked me up to these machines. So I'm sitting there in a lot of pain and my alarm goes off for our meeting. And so I look at my phone, the pain meds kicked in. So I was feeling okay. And I see it. I'm like, oh no, babe, to text the boys that I won't make the meeting. And so, yeah, in the hospital for about 7 days, but once I was able to breathe on my own, we're good to go. But yeah, it was
ready quite, to drive to Utah.
I know, that was crazy.
I mean, you said it was 50% collapse.
Yeah, it was.
And they're like,
yeah.
How do we even
Yeah, he was walking. Like, how are you standing there? Yeah. Like, what are you doing? And I had some stuff in some speaking engagements in Utah, and they're like, no, just shut it down.
You were in Bradenton.
I was in Bradenton, Florida, yeah.
So this guy texts also, right, in our group text, like, yeah, I'm feeling better, like, just got to figure out how to get out of here so I can make it to Utah for my speaking arrangement on Saturday. And it's like midweek of next week as he's like recovering and went through multiple surgeries, right, by the way. They try to fill it up and I don't even know how that works.
It was crazy, but yeah, here we are.
The way it all played out, you got off the cruise ship. Thank God you're off the cruise ship.
Oh my God, yeah. What if it happened on the cruise ship?
Exactly. If I would have been on the plane on the way there or on the cruise, yeah. But to the family, three kids, and as you know, it just changes everything. Like, just changes your world, and you just get so excited for their dreams and their goals, and that's the next venture.
Well, we have, you're a superstar, but your daughter's a bigger superstar.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
And she's all over TV.
Yeah, it's wild. When she was younger, we were watching TV, and she's like, I want to be an actor. And we're like, you want to be an actor? And she's, okay, you know what that means. Like, we're gonna go hard into acting. Got her a coach. Didn't know how to find an acting coach. That's not our industry. Started working with her for a year, and then the coach comes up to us and she's like, oh, your daughter needs an agent. I'm like, she doesn't need an agent. She's exactly the same. Like, she's putting on her fake plays in front of us and her fake acting, and I wasn't sold, but my wife was like, no, she needs an agent. We got to get her an agent. I'm like, babe, she doesn't need an agent. She's like, no, we're going to get her an agent. So we fly to LA and take her into this agency with this huge agency. And I take her in, she auditions, no on the spot. Took about 30 seconds. And so we're walking out and I'm holding her hand. She's like 10 at this moment. She's crying. I'm like, sweetheart, what do you think? You done? In my mind, I'm like, okay, let's get back to sports. Let's get back to soccer. Let's get back to like playing sports. And she's like, wipes her tears. She goes, no, daddy, this means I need to work harder. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. And so she goes, I need a better coach. I'm like, okay. So we go to get her a better coach. We don't know what that means. We're like, okay, whoever charges more money, we're just going to assume you're a better coach. Get her a coach. Another year passes. And then that coach says, she needs an agent. I'm like,
did this song and dance?
Exactly. I'm like, I don't think anything's changed. But my wife's like, oh, she's better now. I'm like, okay. Fly back to Los Angeles.
Your daughter's gonna be really happy to hear the confidence you had in her.
Yeah. Oh, she's heard this a few times. And she goes, Daddy, yeah, I thought you believed. So we go back to LA, signs her on the spot. And so that's kind of like signing to get into the professional, in the minor leagues. Now, doesn't guarantee you're gonna be in show business. You have an agent now. Now you can audition for all these shows. We moved to LA. I'm still with the Red Sox at the time. And they're there for 3 months all summer, and she auditions almost every day for all these shows, all these movies. Doesn't get one of them. She goes back. We go back to Los Angeles in September to start school. I'm in Cleveland with the Browns, sitting in the office, and I'm on a phone, and I'm talking to some people. And I think Baker Mayfield's one of the guys in the office. So we're talking or whatnot, and I see my phone is just it's down, but it's just getting blown up. And so they leave or take off. I look, and my wife, 20 missed calls, 50 texts, like not even exaggerating, call me now. Pick up the phone, I'm like, what's going on? What's happening? What's wrong? She goes, how you doing? I'm like, what do you mean, how am I doing? Like, no, like, what's wrong? She goes, guess who I just got off the phone with? I'm like, now I'm just kind of like facetious and sarcastic. I'm like, I don't know, The Rock. She goes, yep. I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, his people, they just asked Eliana to play his daughter in his next movie, Hobbs and Shaw. In 2019, she played The Rock's daughter in his big movie. And
first gig.
First gig, yeah. And then co-starred in another show, and now she has her own Disney TV show on a Disney channel. Pretty freaking scary. And so,
I think we have a guest.
Crazy.
We need the line.
She,
I mean, what determination.
Dealing
with failure.
I mean, and so many kids after that first audition, you never want to go back and do that ever again.
Oh my gosh.
And the fact that she just kept standing up to it, she's like, I'm ready, let's do this. I need a better coach.
The process. Someone taught her
well. So many tears.
It sounds like you, though, when you got denied for your job, schooling where you kept getting out. You're like, no, I'm going to figure this out. Sounds like that went down the chain.
And it's so funny with that. So what ended up happening, I kept telling my wife, oh, I'm going to be getting mental skills. And I did it for a year without taking action. I was still teaching. And one night, I'll never forget, it's in October. One night, you know, when you're like, before you go to bed, you have these conversations with your spouse, and you're talking, and we turn the lights off. And I'm like, I'm going to be a mental performance coach one day. And my wife, I hear her say, you're all talk. And I just sat there. And I was like, no, there's no way she just said that. I said, and my back's turned to her. I'm like, what? It's pitch black. She goes, you're all talk. And I didn't like the tone how she said it either. I didn't like the tone. I turn on my light and I sit up and I looked at her. I'm like, what did you just say? Like, say it again. Like, let me hear it a third time. Yes. She goes, I said, you're all talk. You keep saying how you're going to go after your dreams. You say you're going to do these big things. You say you're going to go back to school and you've done nothing. You're all talk. And she goes, there's nothing else to say. Like, right? I'm like, yeah. And I turn over, turn the light off, and I didn't sleep that night. Like, it just, which is in my mind, like, you're all talk. Next morning, she wakes up, and I'm like Googling, and I'm like looking at, and then the next day I called the University of Utah and then went, and that was the moment those words that you're all talk from my wife is what really kicked me in the gear. Say, you know what? I am all talk. I'm sorry. I got to stop talking about it, start being about it and doing it, about that action.
I don't know if that's rough or that was strategic on her part.
I know, right? Yeah.
Do you ever talk to her about it?
That's what I love about our certain people in your life. In our cases, our wife or your best friend, where people can say things to you that you won't allow anyone else to say to you or anyone else to talk to you that way. But that one person can say it to you and tell you the truth in a way that cuts you to the soul, but you know you'll allow it because you love them so much. That was one of those moments. I know no one loves me and supports me more than her. Like, we're in it together. And so I knew it came from a really good place. And yeah, I think I think she was really fed up because I was just talking.
to take us back to Malibu after I see you at Nobu and we, you know, really want to start diving into dialogue. That was one of the first things you told me. I want your wife to reach out to me and basically explain or describe you, describe your personality, describe all this stuff. So that makes sense. Like you said, you have, you know, friends that, they're friends, they want the best for you, but at the same time, they're gonna be extremely guarded and filtered on what they say to you, and they don't wanna say certain things that rub you the wrong way, but there's certain people in your life that it's like, no, we're unfiltered here. I'm gonna tell you exactly how it is, and that got you going, huh?
It's so awesome that you remember that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I love.
Drains the waterfall.
Yeah, I love to share, because I always ask a player, who's in your circle? Who is in that tight circle? Because professional athletes, the higher you get on any ladder, even in corporate America, CEOs, the higher you go, the more people want to appease you or put their fingerprints on you, the more they clamor for your attention. It's very difficult to say, like, who can I really trust? Are you telling me, giving that feedback because you really care, or is it? And so I like to ask players, who is in your corner? Like, who? And when you ask a player, you can fit that on the fingers, one to two people. Okay, go to that person and ask that person who can be truly honest with you. Like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your blind spots? And you have to be humble. You've got to be humble because they might tell you some things that you probably didn't want to hear, but you got to, And so that's cool. Yeah, it's cool.
It is. And from a baseball perspective, and I would imagine in most sports, you're so guarded all the time. People come up, media before and after the game, you know, you want to deflect. You don't want to open up. You don't want to sell anybody out.
You're almost media trained that way in a sense, right? Like,
correct.
This is how you have to talk.
Absolutely. So, you know, meeting Casey for the first time, Casey wanted to talk about stuff and she wanted me to open up. And I've always been guarded to the certain point where it's like, okay, this is a different exercise for me. But then you start verbalizing, you start talking about certain things, and it's good to say it and to get it out. Because if not, it's just like, you almost just let it boil up until it gets to a point where it's dangerous. You know what I mean? And you don't want that. But you definitely need that someone or that person that, you know, take the ego out of it. They're not going to hurt your feelings. They just want what's best for you, and they're going to get you going, whether it's one word, whether it's something they do. But it's so true, man. That's a great story with your wife.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, my God.
Like, I need to turn your light back on. Let's talk about this again.
One more time? Say it again. Say it again. Yeah. Say it four times. Yeah, she wasn't backing down. Let me say it louder this time.
Unreal.
Yeah, but you bring up a really good point, too, because a lot of the example I love to give is like, I'll have guys like hold up a bottle of water or a cup of water or whatever. And I'll ask a guy, okay, how much do you think this weighs? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, just guess. Like, 5 ounces, 3 ounces, okay. And I just, do you think you can hold it up like that for a minute? Yeah. Okay, do you think you can hold it up like that for an hour? Like, how about for 17 hours? How about for 2 days? And they'll be like, no, I can't. Why? Oh, my arm would hurt. It would be incredibly painful. And we go on to say, it doesn't matter how heavy the cup is, it's how long you hold it. The longer you hold on to something, the heavier it becomes. And so my role will become to allow guys to just let it go. Even if you just verbalize it, just like, I'm pissed, I'm scared, I feel like whatever. And I'll tell guys, like, just, we don't even have to talk about it. Like, sometimes they'll just like say it and the guys will just start going off and I'll say, are you venting or do you want to solve the problem? And some guys will be like, I just need to vent. All right, cool. Let it eat. And so they'll go, they'll vent, and then I'll say, what else? And what else? And this, and this, and then what else? And then you can sense it. You see in their shoulders, like, they're just putting it down, then they put it down. And then when it's all done, because you don't ever want to just be in a complain fest. You don't want to sit down and just talk crap about people or it's right. Your situation. Then at the very end, okay, and then they're like, no, I got nothing else. And then there comes a bonus question. What are you going to do about it? And so then I go and I say, okay, you have this situation and you're 0 for your last 22 and this is happening and your mom's living with you and you can't really stand her. And like all these little things that nobody else knows about. Like, yeah. Okay. We got it all. Okay. Anything else? Nope. All right. What are you going to do about it? And then the guy's like, all right, just got to focus on the process or I got to do this. And then they come up with their own answers just to get them to see the solutions, not just focusing on the problems. And so that's a really good point. Sometimes it's just, I just happen to be in the right place at the right spot and they're ready to just chat.
Yeah. And even like a step further than that, you know, as a kid, the impact that certain family members, mother, dad, you know, like you said, your dad was relentless. He said, I'm going to find a way to be on this team. I'm going to find a way to be productive. I'm going to find a way to play every single day. You know, my dad was a firefighter. It was 48 hours on, 28, 4 hours off, same schedule. That's what it was. So for me, putting everything into perspective, you know, this guy's showing up going to work every single day and he's saving lives. So for me, as a baseball player, I get to play a kid's game. I get to live this dream. I mean, that impacted me so much to the point where it's like, all right, I'm going to get my ass up and do a workout today because my dad went 48 straight hours putting his life on the line to save other people and to be that. My mother, you know, my mother's got a big family, bunch of brothers, sisters. Unfortunately, she's gone through some adversity in that, whether it's been health, whether it's been something that's happened to those families, family members. And I'll just never forget, whenever I came home from school, it was the same face I got from my mother. It was happy. How was your day? So like in a sport, especially with baseball, where it's every single day and you're gonna have good days, you're gonna have bad days. The way I saw her wear those bad days, it's just, I had no choice but to follow that. You know, when you put everything into perspective, that's just, it gives you no other option, no other choice. So it's amazing how that stuff can really have that long-term effect on you.
So what you just
starts
did.
From the top.
I was going to say, yeah, what you just did is something that a lot of, I don't even know if you realize what you just did.
But usually to go, half the time
here's it. I don't think most people don't. Like, yeah. But here's what I love, and here's if this was a real conversation, a real performance conversation, I would label what you just did. what you did is a lot of people here going through a struggle. All we want to do is get you to shift your perspective. Where do you go? You went to your parents. And so everyone has something where you, and I'd just say, oh, okay. So now in my mind, whenever you're going through a tough stretch, I would say, hey, how would your pops respond to this? Or what, tell me about your mom or something like that, just to get a player, because you just showed me, wow, those were two examples that really helped me make good decisions when I'm going through adversity. I just got to think about mom and dad. And so that is for you. And so that was you. And so you're like, oh, okay, let's explore that a little bit more. And so that's really what it looks like. Everyone, I'll just listen to people talk and be like, oh, do you realize you just did this? Mm-hmm. That's your role. That's the way you do it. Or how do you, oh, that's how you do it. And so that's really, I become like another job description, labeler. I'm just I'm a noticer. I just notice how people talk and what they say and say, oh, let me just bring that up later, next time. Yeah.
I got to ask your opinion on this. So, you know, we've talked about when people are going through struggles, when it's bad times, you know, that type of stuff, all that. For me, I have a theory, especially in sports and to our spot baseball, that I truly find out what someone's like when they're having success. When you're having success, you're on top of the world, everyone's feeding into that ego. Then I want to see how you're treating people. Because when you're doing bad, you're vulnerable, you're hoping someone comes up to you and talks to you, you're hoping someone's giving you that kind of love. If a coach walks by you, you're like, I'm done. He didn't even look at me. They're not paying any kind of attention to me. But the guy that has success and how he's handling that, how he's feeding off, what's your opinion on that? Because to me, that's when I think you really, really find out who this true dude really is. Mm-hmm.
Can it be both?
Absolutely.
I think that too. I love what you just brought up, because when people are successful, we always talk about, it's a common phrase in pro baseball for those who like, oh, big league in me. Oh, right. Wow. Big. Oh, now all of a sudden you get a player of the month and now you don't return my tug. Guys will crush each other on that kind of stuff. I completely agree. I think you will see when someone's successful anywhere, it's playing higher, better than you normally play, or just way worse than you normally play. You'll reveal a lot about someone's character after how they win and how they fail and how they treat people. And yeah, usually you get clues. You get clues really quickly on a person's character and just see just how they operate through that success in different environments. And I think that's a great, great point. And I think, as we talked about, I said this before, and I think no one knows the clubhouse and the pulse of the clubhouse and players better than players. I think you all have seen, like you said in our first episode, you're with each other for so many months, and you know when a guy is just a little bit off. You know when he's just, his attitude or his routine's off a little bit, or you notice 2 days in a row, oh, why is he hitting off the tee when he never hits off the tee? Or what, those tiny little things, why is he playing catch right here? Oh, he's doing playing catch in front of the dugout. He never does that. Wait, is somebody here? Oh, okay. When you see it, you start making all these little, just kind of like under trying to just guess why things are happening. But I love what you said.
That's a little tidbit. Maybe people don't even realize what you're saying. So like when front office might be in town, or like directors or anything, like coordinators of certain positions, like if an outfield coordinator is in town, maybe an outfielder is getting up in front of the dugout to throw to show that they're like, they're ready to go, they're staying loose. Like, it's a thing. Like, you know, I don't know if anyone, people know that. Like, guys do funny things sometimes just to make sure they're in the eyes of the bigwigs, which look, you can't hate on completely. I get what they're doing, but at the same time, like, as a respect for like each other, we're all like, man, we're all here too. Like, don't be trying to get in front of me by just showing off. Like, go do your thing, you know, on the field. So that's interesting, but I bet most people don't even know what you were talking about.
Yeah, good point.
And you shared a good story, real quick, Tell. You shared a good story about Cash. And one of the best assistant coaches that I've had and got to play for is Bobby Dickerson. And his big thing was, and I might be saying this wrong, but we want to be proactive instead of reactionary or reactive, whatever it is. Meaning, okay, in spring training or whatever our routine, whatever our process is, we want to cover that every single day. I don't care if you went out and we didn't work on your backhand and you missed two backhands in the game. The next day, we're not going to go out and do backhands. So you told a story about Kevin Cash. It was cut off, cuts and relays.
Yep.
To me, that's what separates the great managers from the good managers. And just to cover that, I mean, I want you to say that because to me, when you said that, I'm like, man, that's absolutely genius. And that's somebody who gets it.
Yeah. We were talking about leadership. We're talking about managers and leaders and how you affect the culture and having just keeping the context into consideration and the feelings of the people you're leading into consideration. And so we're playing the game. It was at home. We had scheduled to do cuts and relays the next day. It was already scheduled. It was going to happen. I think it's a little bit later in the season. We hadn't done anything in a long time. And there was a botched cut and relay in the middle of the game. Well, it happens. It happens in baseball. You make some mistakes. Cashy went up to our outfield guy and he ended up banging or saying, for those who don't know, ended up saying, we're not going to do it tomorrow. We are not going to practice cuts and relays the next day as it was planned because it was just botched. Because he didn't want the players to think that, oh, we messed it up here. Okay, we're going to go out and practice it. So it was, and everyone's like, oh, the reason we're doing this is because we messed up. That's the kind of feel that great managers and great leaders have. It's like they're always looking around the corner to think, hey, let's just understand the feelings of people. And I just think Kevin Cash being an outstanding leader and culture creator, that's just one of the many stories that just kind of is evidence to how much feel he has as a former player and now a manager of a team.
Something to be said about feel. I mean, we were talking about that too, where it's like in high school, college, it's just go, 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 quantity. I get you're trying to figure it out, but at a certain point too, you can get worn out even before you get to pro ball, especially with how much the kids play these days, right? Yeah. And I remember getting to like double A and it's like, we don't have to take infield every day. And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. My arm feels so good.
Yeah.
And like, and then I went to Japan. It was the exact opposite. I went at the end of my career too, and my shoulder wasn't feeling good. And it was like, if you don't take infield outfield, you're not playing. And I was playing right field. So I make six throws in infield outfield. I was like, guys, I can't do this. They're like, if you don't take infield outfield, you can't play. I'm like, I can. And I'll actually probably play better. So let me not take it. But it wasn't happening. It was about no feel, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah. No feel. Like, you got to just understand what players want, what they need mentally, all this stuff. It's just so important, but it's nice if you have some feel. And I want to go back to the point of like success and knowing how people are. And you know, you mentioned it, but I want to say like that we're still friends because of that. Mm. And like, we go way back and spent a lot of time together, but we split up fairly early. We probably only played together on the same team for parts of three seasons, maybe even two.
IA, double A, triple A.
Yeah, like, and parts of them, not even in their entirety. But like, you know, he goes on and becomes mega success in the big leagues, and I'm just trying to get there. And we never end up playing again at that level. But just because he was having all the success doesn't mean he couldn't return a phone call or he didn't get to big league me. So,
yeah.
And that's why we're here, bro.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's go.